Around the NFL podcast.
Wonders why there aren't more good football movies.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Not an accurate money drop. I spend very little time pondering NFL movies. Don't care that there aren't good ones. Don't need a football movie.
I respect that you're clarifying your individual stance. I can't make sense of it. I mean, the most popular
name
sport.
A good one.
I know there are good ones out there, and I had this conversation with Damashek on a show last month, but the fact that it's the most popular sport in America and that, you know, here's Hollywood that loves to make money and cash in on what people love, they can't find it. They can't find the common ground to make some good movies.
So elusive. So
well, here's a great one. Undefeated, which won Best Documentary at the Oscars and is one of my favorite football movies
not a
or
documentary.
Any movie. What?
Documentaries are one thing. I'm talking about a fiction.
Here's tale. Another one. Gleason. I saw this weekend. It's like unbelievably
the fictional
powerful.
Character Steve Gleason?
No, I know. But to me, what's the difference? It's a movie is a movie, and it's a piece of art. It's document, and it's incredible.
You cried.
I wasn't planning to
You
talk
cried
about
while
it.
You watched that movie, didn't you?
There were a few parts in that movie where I wasn't crying. It was like a test to see if I could run out of tears. I'm kind of kidding somewhat, but I don't even want to say too much about it because people should just see it and decide on it.
I want to party with you on the weekends, Greg. I heard that movie pulls at the old heartstrings.
Yeah. Like I said, I almost don't even want to say too much about it because it's a heavy movie, but it's not about the crying or the emotional part of it is secondary. It's not really much of a movie about football.
I really need to plug back in on football because when you sent that text, I thought it was a movie about Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason. That's funny. For Wes.
I'm wildly vulnerable now to any type of pop culture that connects like the father and son dynamic.
Well, it's a movie about father and son. It's a movie about.
Once I saw the trailer, I was like,
talk about a
much.
Humble brag.
What?
I'm a dad now. I totally get dad movies. Give me
I
a
do.
Break.
Just keeping it real over here, Mark. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Listen, there are millions of people who love the show. Well, okay. 10,000 people that love the show.
That's more than that. Way more.
Okay, so hundreds of
we
thousands
get a million
people.
Downloads a month.
Don't assume.
We are loved by hundreds of thousands of people. Okay?
Beholden to none of them.
That might be too high.
Well, not just the people. Maybe we are beholden to the people. They're the listeners. We want to entertain them. It's the corpos that we're not beholden to.
Gotcha. Yeah, why do you need to go antagonistic with our audience a minute and a half into the show, Wes?
That's the relationship we have, me and the audience.
Whoa. Breaking news. What's going on with you and the audience?
We're all right. That's just how we do.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't have to be all touchy-feely with everybody in your life.
That's true.
Or anyone.
Wes, keeping the world an arm's length away since 1974.
out of my head, Dan.
good show today. Fun show today. You know why, Greg? And I know you love this. There's a lot of football to talk about.
That makes it exciting.
Not just football that's going on practice fields, football that didn't happen at all on Sunday, if you catch my drift. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And so we'll get into the disaster in Canton, and then we will talk about what we learned. The winners and losers, right, Greg? Because you wrote a banger.
We can talk about what we learned too. It's all
the same
out there.
Yes, the winners and losers / what we learned from week two of training camp, and there's a lot of stuff to go through there, digest. Eliminate the waste. And by the way, speaking of eliminate, I got an email. We all got an email from a shadowy league figure. It said no more the drop about, Greggy does Dallas.
They didn't like that.
That is not allowed to be played on the show anymore.
I don't remember that email.
It was an email that landed on Friday. Let's cut it out. That's over.
Can we play it one more time?
I don't think we can even do that.
I genuinely thought that was an absolutely enjoyable, right, entertaining drop.
Because I guess I would think it's the feminine voice at the end that led to, well, I would censorship imagine. Here.
Yeah.
So if you want to just hear that part of it, we can. We could bleep out the woman. Okay, one more time. Last time. Did that do anything for you? It's not the same, is it?
It's not the same.
So that's, you know.
I'm disappointed. I take it as a shot at me. I've been looking for theme music my whole life. Finally found it. Now it's taken away.
Yeah, you get a little jealous, admit it, when Get Your Dan Hansis plays. This could have been your real chance for something to catch on. Greggy Does Dallas. And
I feel like there's a lot of truth in Greg's jealousy of your song.
Which song is that, by the way?
Must We.
Get Your Dan Hansis. Get Your Dan Hansis. Turn it up, everybody. If anybody's out there that wants to get Greg some type of theme music, it would have to be cleared by the rest of us.
It would also have to be good. I mean,
yeah, it has
take
to
a lot of enjoyment out of that because it fits you and it's good.
You're right, Wes.
Where is that artist's career right now?
I can't even knock you for how much enjoyment you get out of it because I would be the same way.
I play it probably 10 times a month on the show at least.
How often in your bedroom at home do you play that just on loop?
That's like some people have a sound machine where it's like waves crashing.
Yeah.
It's just that song.
Same people. Yeah.
All right, let's do some news.
We haven't lost a game yet here in LA or thrown any interceptions, so.
California seems like a great place to be, so.
All right, that is from Hard Knocks.
Case Keenum and his wife Kimberly moving into their new house.
I love the wags when they're involved, the wives and girlfriends on Hard Knocks, which premieres, by the way, Tuesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO, as has been the case on Around the NFL for the past 5 or 6 years. Episode recaps written by yours truly will go up at, I don't know, several hours after the show airs, but that night of. So all the other bums that wake up in the morning, roll out of bed, and get up there, Hard Knocks recaps, I'll already have mine up hours earlier.
You're competing against like a string of hobos writing football articles, according to you.
Yes, basically. Speaking of hobos, well, that's not fair. But I don't know who runs the on-field work over in Canton at the Hall of Fame Stadium. What is that, the Tom Benson Memorial Field?
I have a feeling they're not jumping from train to train in the 1930s, eating nail soup.
Tom Benson's also still alive, so I feel like it wouldn't be called the Memorial.
It's the Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium, not like, the Memorial. Yeah, there's no memorial attached to it.
Okay, thank you. The official return of pro football will have to wait, Greg. The NFL canceled Sunday night's Hall of Fame game because of poor field conditions. And I'll tell you a little bit about these poor field conditions. And I could use, Mark, you did a nice job highlighting a part of Mike Silver gave a nice breakdown of what went wrong at the field, why the field was unusable. So, Irish, can you give me a little music for this? According to several sources familiar with the field preparation, things went awry after the subsequent painting of logos in the middle of the field and in the end zones on Sunday. Improper paint may have been used, and when it did not seem to be drying quickly enough, someone apparently made the dubious decision to heat the field in an effort to dry it, thus melting the rubber pellets inside the field turf and creating a slick, sticky, congealed effect. At one point, 2.5 hours before the game, stadium workers applied a substance that appeared to be paint thinner in an effort to remedy the issue. However, according to a Packers source, one Green Bay employee noticed the label that warned of severe burns when exposed to skin. And that was not the answer. I mean, I feel bad for those people that it was their job to have the field ready, but there is a comical nature to it, let's face it.
I mean, Greg and I, we've been to the Hall of Fame game. We've been to Canton. And the one thing that I don't think
is... Wes has too, right?
I've never been to Canton.
Oh, my bad.
And I don't plan on ever going.
Sorry.
Well, all right. I would. I don't know where you're coming from with that.
No,
I grow a response.
Keeping Sorry. Institutions at an arm's length since 1972.
Okay. Well, okay. Good for you, Wes. But I'm going to say, being there, that from a distance, it's not a good football game. I get that. It's, for most, unwatchable. But it matters a lot to that city. They put everything into it. And I just don't understand, when you are attached to a $10, $11 billion company and the first game of the year is coming out, why have you not gone through 5 or 6 test runs of exactly how to do this. That's my only question. Maybe they did, and then everything went ceiling zero at the end here, but I don't understand the process. It seems very garbled.
Yeah, it's strange. You know, it's strange they play on a high school field that's not owned or run by the Hall of Fame or the NFL. They had brought in the field. It was a former Saints turf, and next year it's going to be a completely different turf, so whatever lessons they learn can't really be applied for it. But it's an embarrassment. I mean, there's not too much more to say. I did get a little tired quickly on Twitter. Everyone had a super hot take and trying to come up with lots of nuanced things to do with, like, the Hall of Fame game being canceled. All right, it's canceled. You don't have to have a hot take on everything. It's an embarrassment.
But I liked what you were explaining downstairs, that the people that were up on their soapboxes, you know, praying for the roster guys on the end of the roster that wouldn't have a chance now to make the team.
Right.
That doesn't make sense, though.
Right, that they weren't getting the extra chance. So this game doesn't mean a lot to the stars, but it means a lot to the guys at the end of the roster. Okay, that's true. Well, they still have 4 more preseason
right.
games in which those guys play the first and the last. These two teams basically got a free extra week of training camp, and I think in their hearts of hearts, there's plenty of people within both of those teams that appreciated that extra week of practice, and they didn't even have to play a game where they could possibly have been hurt.
One secret victim in this, me. Wrote a 8-bullet-pointed preview of this game that got tweeted out.
Ouch.
As I was just about to sit down and watch this, gets tweeted out, and then bang, presto, game canceled, post, worthless.
Well, yeah,
that hurts.
Mark immediately tweeted out, now it's the most useless post in NFL.com history.
What about your Garoppolo film study?
Well, that was one. I went through the archives and started looking at some of the other Mark Sessler examples that could have possibly been more useless. You had your Ben Hartsock tracker.
I think that was that largely went unread.
Max Turk.
you did 600 words on Max Turk, the Chargers third-round center signing. That could have been more useless.
We'll find out.
Making the leap on Toby Gerhart.
Yes, that was a disaster.
Do you have Mike Pettine Believeland?
Oh, no. That was like a long form, Dan. How about go dig a hole and get in it?
Wait, I've got a couple others. But I found actually the two most useless ones. One, this is from early 2012. Teenager.
Oh, no.
Teenager named Peyton Manning faces... faces identity issues. can't even say it.
That'd be like an end around post today, am I
yeah,
wrong?
Yeah, I like that. That's a great that's a great headline. How's he doing?
I don't know. That was your
And there's another one, you know, this one stuck out. No Kardashian connection for Tebow. That's
well, there was a period, and Dan will remember this, in our newsroom where I don't know what the direction was for us, but we were chronicling TMZ-like relationships between football players
and
minstresses.
Can we step back and add a modicum of perspective to this whole thing?
Do it, Wes.
I'm road tripping, and this guy at the restaurant tells me, oh, yeah, did you hear they canceled the Hall of Fame game? I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not working today because I'd have to act like it was a big deal. It's not a big deal at all. They've been trying to cancel the preseason for years now.
That's true.
They did America a favor by canceling this game.
Roger Goodell's trying to reduce the preseason. That is a fact.
All right, moving on. The other, you know, the centerpiece of the weekend in Canton was the induction of more Hall of Fame players. The 54th NFL Hall of Fame class inducted Saturday night. Brett Favre, Kevin Green, Eddie DeBartolo Jr., Ken Stabler, Dick Stanfield, Orlando Pace, Tony Dungy, and Marvin Harrison all unveiled. Brett Favre talking about his old man, what he meant to him, Irish.
Deanna says to me on the plane, you know, your dad had said to me that he had hoped or could not wait for the day that you were inducted into the Hall of Fame so he could introduce you. And so a new goal had entered my mind then and there. And I said to myself, I will make it to the Hall of Fame. That I would make it to the Hall of Fame so I could acknowledge the fact of how important he was in my career and my life.
See, Mark, that father and son stuff that connects with me, connects with Brett Favre, it should connect with you as well.
I didn't say that it didn't. I just didn't need to put it up on a big platform for everyone to ponder.
Well, I didn't think I was really going out on a limb saying that I like spending time with my son. But, you know, I think Favre what had to be the centerpiece here. But, Wes, was there anybody in this class, this Hall of Fame class, and I know you're not a big Hall of Fame guy, that you think richly deserved to be in there or shouldn't have been inducted at all? Is there somebody that stood out to you as a historian of the game from this group?
Well, I would say first that my first reaction to this class is the Favre reaction, that having watched all of these guys except really Ken Stabler play and Dick Stanfield, Favre was by far the most memorable and contributed more to my football enjoyment, 10 times more than anybody else on this list. He deserves to be the centerpiece. I guess Ken Stabler, to me, one thing reading over the years, I recently read his biography, and it's just like a wake-up call to the difference in time period. There's a, like a machismo there where he kind of denigrates women all throughout the 70s, and it just doesn't hold up well. But I think John Madden gave him one of the highest compliments in history. If you were to line up and play any sport or any competition, any parlor game, Ken Stabler's your number one draft choice.
Well, and Favre, during hit, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Any parlor game.
Any sport, any competition, you want Ken Stabler's
so you're
number
if you're
one draft choice.
In a wiffle ball tournament, 2-on-2.
I think you that's what John Madden would say.
You want Stabler.
You want the pick the snake.
You want the snake. And Favre.
That's awesome.
Favre told a great story as part of his speech, which did go down as the longest speech in Pro Football Hall of Fame history.
Wow.
Ouch.
Not a shocker. And a lot of it was great. He told a story, the first game he ever went to. End of the season, Saints trying to clinch a playoff spot, which was rare in those days. And he saw this cool guy coming out with his hair flowing, badass, out of the locker room for the Raiders. And he said that day I decided I want to be that guy. Hmm. And that guy was Ken Stabler.
And if I could just make a point on I think Please this do. Goes all across sports, but the NFL too. Ken Stabler died last year, right? Mm-hmm. And this happens in entertainment and in sports, I feel like. You put these guys into these Hall of Fames after they die. It's not like their achievements got any greater or less in that time when they were dead and alive. Why do we wait till they're gone to honor them?
Well, there's a sentimentality factor that I think contributed to Ken Stabler getting into the Hall of Fame.
It's unfortunate because I think just about everyone that watched him play and what he meant to those Raiders teams and everything would agree how much he was deserving of making it into the Hall of Fame.
It's a damn shame that he didn't get to have that moment.
Is it more of a shame than the fact that Ken Anderson was probably a better player and will never get into the Hall of Fame?
You're never going to satisfy everyone with these picks. You know, some people could argue for or against any of these players, but you do realize watching it, and I saw just how much it means to all of them. My secret winner of the day was Marvin Harrison, who on a day where you could tell it's tough speaking, it was basically a destination weekend for Packers fans. The Packers fans showed up for Favre as much as I've seen any fans. I wasn't there, but you know, show up for any player. And people were nervous making those speeches. Marvin Harrison was pretty cool and was pretty funny. He made jokes about, you know, he wasn't going to set a record for making the shortest speech. He really credited some people in his past and was very natural. I felt like I got to know Marvin Harrison a little bit better. And Peyton Manning is just sitting there beaming the whole time. He was loving it.
I don't imagine everyone thinks Marvin Harrison's funny.
Not every person.
There might be a couple people in Philadelphia.
One quick takeaway.
Yes. Yes, Mark.
The Kevin Green bust.
Yes.
Best Hall of Fame bust ever.
Flowing locks, right?
I think they did a fan. He looks like He-Man. Yeah. I mean, he looks like an absolute hero cut out of a comic book.
And he probably had the best speech, I would say, of the weekend, too. If you just, I mean, he made the speech.
Is like, that's three best speeches
like
at
he
this
played.
Point.
No, I said Marvin Harrison was the sneaky surprise, but Green was the best. And Harrison kept it tight still. 10 All minutes. Right. That's smart.
Let's move on, guys. Let's try to keep it tight ourselves here. Robert Griffin III is the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Hugh Jackson, in a press release released by the team, it's time. Robert has earned the right to be named the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. And, Mark, I think we've been talking about this in the last couple of shows. At the very least, this adds an element of intrigue to the Browns season. Whether it's going to go good or bad, having RG3 around at least is kind of exciting. At least until football starts. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think we saw this coming from a mile away. I mean, we knew last week that he'd be the starter. It would have been a shocking if anything else happened. It adds interest because we haven't seen RG3 be a reliable starter in almost half a decade. So it is...
Are you excited about this?
I'm excited about some of the rest of the team, the younger players that they're gathering around RG3. He remains someone that I was genuinely annoyed by RG3 the last couple of years covering football. So it's a weird that he's on the team that I supposedly would root for if I weren't here all the time. So
supposedly.
What do you mean?
Well,
supposedly.
I'm you're just detached from them. I'm so detached from the Browns on some level, but it's not like I'm some fanboy over RG3 because he's on the Browns. Now I think it's the biggest question mark on their offense.
You are to me as attached, and I think it's a good thing. To the Browns is just about any NFL fan I know with their team.
Yeah, I want to see them succeed, but I think there's a different type of fan where you could sign like someone that you from a super rival and you suddenly start rooting for them. I don't feel that way about RG3. I want to just see if Hugh Jackson can make it work. It would be an interesting NFL story if he did.
Had a big scrimmage too on Friday night. Showed up and dropped some long passes in there. Supposedly has looked pretty good last half week. The worry, of course, is when the pass rush shows up. You know, is he going to be the same guy?
More bad news for the Buffalo Bills. Second-round linebacker Reggie Ragland went down during Friday's practice with a non-contact knee injury while chasing down Reggie Bush. The team is said to be very concerned, or that's what Rex Ryan had to say, about the injury. They don't know how bad it is because of the swelling, but there is a general idea that this could be potentially a season-ending injury or an injury that knocks him out for a large portion of his rookie season. And that is not good news for a Bills team that seems to be accumulating a lot of bad breaks, Greg Rosenthal.
Yeah, this is the problem when you name three starters in your rookie class before they even hit the field. Two of them now aren't there, Shaq Lawson and Reggie Ragland. And it's not a good sign that the swelling is still so bad 4 days after the fact that they can't even make a final determination. They signed two veteran linebackers right away, David Hawthorne and Brandon Spike, so that's a sign that they don't expect him to be back soon. I mean, he was going to have a huge role for that defense, and they are a thin defense, a top-heavy defense.
He was basically supposed to be a younger, better version of Brandon Spikes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was a Rex Ryan-type player. Rex Ryan, from the minute he was on the team, couldn't stop talking about him.
My mom had a saying all through my childhood, if I said something that was too presumptive, she would say, "Don't spit in the sky." And that's all I could think about when I heard about this. Back on May 10th, I did it around the NFL post, where Doug Whaley was on TA, Total Access, and Lindsey Rhodes asked if the team had any day one starters, and this is alluding to what Greg said earlier. And Doug Whaley replied, "At least three. Shaq Lawson is going to walk in off the bus starting. Reggie Ragland and then Adolphus Washington, all three of those guys will start right off the bus. And we're excited for some guys.
The bus. Who's riding a bus anywhere?
For six rounds that will contribute for us." I mean, there's something I remember that struck me as a little bit of an odd thing to say.
Feels a little chesty.
May. And, you know, the football god sure enough strike him down with a couple bolts of lightning.
Well, from another angle, Rex Ryan was not shy about saying that the defense was super thin at the end of last season, that they're starting because of their lack of depth in certain areas, too.
It's a problem. Of course, you want your early draft picks to play right away, but this is the type of thing bad organizations fall into. They went into this draft needing starters at those three positions, so they took their starters at those three positions. A good organization, like the Bengals, for instance, it's crazy to think of them that way in terms of their drafting. They don't necessarily need their first or second round picks to play right away.
Well, this is part of what I was getting at a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the Bills, and I said they have as low of a floor as any team in the AFC. They could implode, and I think some of the elements are in place for them to implode.
It feels like Rex is in a very bad spot right now.
They feel a little snake bit. On Monday, should have been one of the most positive days they've had all year. They get Sammy Watkins back to practice. They get Marcel Darius back to practice, who, by the way, no one, you know, coming off a bad year and coming off a foot injury. They get Kyle Williams back to practice, their defensive leader. Okay, everything's great. Now they have Cordy Glenn, their left tackle, has a high ankle sprain. Richie Incognito got hurt today at practice. Not sure how serious that is. I mean, they've just had, it feels like a lot of bad luck.
With Glenn, they're just shelving him till the regular season. They're not even going to try to get him back in there.
Let's talk some more injuries, guys. Jordan Matthews. He's out a couple of weeks for the Eagles. Doug Peterson announced Monday that the third-year receiver has knee soreness. The hope is that Matthews will be ready for the team's third preseason game against the Colts. No structural damage for Jordan Matthews, but still a thing to keep an eye on. Thomas Rawls of the Seahawks, meanwhile, has passed his physical, a big step for Rawls, who suffered a broken leg that ended what was turning into a major breakout season last year. He was placed on the PUP just before the start of training camp as he, quote, as he was finalizing his recovery from that ankle. So he's been saying he'll be ready for the start of the season for months. This was a step toward the right direction. And finally, Julian Edelman of the New England Patriots, the wide receiver who underwent minor corrective surgery on his foot back in May. He is off the PUP and was looking very good in some workouts. Edelman, a major piece of that offense, Greg.
Absolutely. I mean, they haven't had many of their top receivers available during much of camp, but I think they don't worry about it when you have Tom Brady. I'd be a little more worried if I'm the Eagles. Jordan Matthews is so important to that receiver group because they don't have any other receivers.
Yeah, they have a sneaky bad wide receiver core. When guys like Chris Givens is being talked about as a potential starter, give me a break.
Right, each day there's a different, you know, report about who's likely to start on that team or who's likely to play. We have no idea. At this point, it's not even locked in that Nelson Agholor is going to start. You got Josh Huff. You got Ruben Randall.
Doesn't it just mean nobody's standing out, basically, if you can't make heads or tails? Every beat writer is telling you about a different receiver that's taking over.
We talked about all the time Mark wasted on all these articles he wrote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, hours.
Well, that's nothing compared to all the fantasy football articles written about Seattle Seahawks rookie running backs this year. Going to waste. Thomas Rawls is the man, and game film tells us that if he's healthy. But Christian Michael is way ahead of any of these rookies. Those are their top two running backs in Seattle, and I think they're going to be just fine.
Over
you,
under
you love
touches.
Christian Michael.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're back well,
look,
in.
Here's the deal.
Talk about useless posts. How about the Christian Michael's going to lead the Cowboys in rushing posts for
you
Wesley
can give me
Lusky.
All the Ouch. Crap you want about that. That's fair. But the light flipped on in week 17 and 18 last year. We saw it on the field. We heard their coaching staff talk about it. All offseason this year, they're calling him the leader in the running backs room. They call him money. I mean, he's been their guy.
Looked good in week 17, by
the way. Looked great in week 17. Looked good in the playoff game in week 18.
Isn't it a good sign that he made it through the whole offseason and he's still with him? They brought him back a second time. There's got to be some element of trust there.
Absolutely. He's got to stay healthy. Rawls and all these guys, Aqib Talib is another one that's big to watch. DeMarcus Ware, who's got a pretty serious back injury, is another guy to watch. When they get back on the field, they still have to get back into the mix. They'll be brought along slowly. You hope Rawls is the same player, but I think it sounds like they have enough confidence in Michael that it wouldn't be surprising if he gets some run early in the year.
Over-under
game. Surprising at all.
Wes, over-under game. Christian Michael, 150 touches.
I will say under because Thomas Rawls is that good. I mean, it all depends on Thomas Rawls' health.
Very good. Moving on, let's talk moms. Mom talk. What? Now, how does that not get a sponsor?
That should.
Mom talk. Like, what would be a good...
That's how the voiceover would be for that?
Well, maybe we'd get a female eventually. But what's like a good mom product that we could maybe reach out, have Irish reach out to?
Mom jeans?
Johnson & Johnson?
Johnson & Johnson. Mom jeans is not a real product. Johnson & Johnson would be good. What else?
Castrol.
Yeah, feels like you're going down some territory here that would seem to be a little stereotypical.
Well, Johnson & Johnson connects with anyway, here we go. Joey Bosa's mom has something to say. Because her son, the first-round pick of the Chargers, still is not on the team. And this is wild. I mean, he's still not playing. We have football, Greg, in a month. We're going to be playing
exactly a month
games
from today.
That count. And Joey Bosa is still not with the Chargers in 2016 after a CBA seemed to wipe this out as a possibility. A Chargers blog, the SD Bolt Report, solid name, uncovered a Facebook post made by Bosa's mother, Cheryl Bosa, in which she said the following in response to another comment bashing the Chargers and offering support to Bosa. Cheryl said, "It bums me out for Joey so much. I wish we pulled an Eli Manning on draft day." And that, Wes, is a reference to when Eli did not want to play for the Chargers and basically forced that team's hand to trade him to the Giants, a move that went down in history. Ooh, doggy, it's getting ugly in San Diego.
Also, one of the number one reason why to this day I'm not an Eli Manning fan.
Oh, we don't want to go down that road again.
I'm just saying, that was not a bad operation. He basically just pulled a childish little tantrum. It was a team coming off one bad season. It wasn't like they were an awful organization. And I think, okay, so Joey Bosa's father played football. There's a savviness that you get from that. Going through the process, it's like when you're applying for colleges and trying to get student loans and your parents have never been to school before. It's a different process for that kid than it is for parents who have been in college before. So there's a savviness that Joey Bosa gets, but there's also a sense of entitlement that you've gotten because your parents played, your dad played ball, and Eli Manning had the same sense of entitlement.
How savvy is this, though, that you're basically risking your entire rookie season going up in flames right now over, you know, what seems like a minor contract matter?
Well, one, they knew the Chargers, you know, in recent history do not bend on these issues. And so if you're going to go in and make this the focal point or the sticking point of a contract and getting Bosa into camp, you knew this conflict was coming, and it's about the organization bending. And it seems like a setup for a disaster. On the flip side, I'm sorry, this is someone's mom sticking up for their son, and this is good investigative work, but you went on our Facebook page. If someone wants to go write news stories about what I say on my Facebook page, it's not going to go too well.
Right.
She was actually,
I mean, give me a break.
She was responding. It does make me wonder about the threshold of what's news or not. She was responding to a comment on their Facebook page. So she's off reading the SDBoltReport.com.
SDBoltReport.
She just has a reply to a comment on that page, and I guess why? Of course they're going to report that. But on some level, it's just, okay, are all wives and kids social media now fair game?
No, it should not.
It's an interesting question, but it might also be a window into their viewpoint.
Absolutely. Plus, she responded to this website, to a Chargers website. So on some level, she's jumping into that, knowing that she's putting that out there to some Chargers.
Well, it's clear. It's not like the two parties are happy. It's like the two parties are clearly unhappy.
Right.
That's not a surprise.
Well, this opinion in this room that's putting some blame on Bosa is the minority. I think if you talk to, I think most people, whether they're within the league or whatever, the anger is towards the team. I mean, it's just, will you pay his money right now, or are you going to pay it deferred in March? You're paying the money anyways. It's all stupid, which is why I play equal blame on both. You just got to figure this out, because it's not a big enough issue to sideline this kid.
That was Mom Talk, sponsored by Lady Foot Locker. I feel like I'm in the clear there. That's okay, right?
Good job, Dan.
That's still a place?
No comment.
They still have Lady Foot Locker?
I don't know.
I feel like they got to be downsized.
I don't. I
they
think
put
that's
it all.
Why
on.
Is it? If anything, there's more women than men in the world. Why would Lady Foot Locker be in danger?
Well, I'm talking more about like the mall shoe retail business. Feels like it's been a shrinking market, but I could be wrong on that.
You know, I disagree, Greg, because if there's one article of clothing or of some type of outerwear that I want to try on, it's a pair of sneakers. That's why I go to Lady Foot Locker. If I was a woman, I would go there.
They're all over the place, by the way. You guys can go to one at the Westfield Culver City Mall.
That's a nice mall.
Greg doesn't do malls.
Underrated.
No.
Oh, no, we go there.
All the time.
Drop it off. Yeah.
Just walking right by Lady Foot Locker, not knowing that it's existing, coming on the podcast and deciding that business doesn't operate anymore. That's what you're doing.
I'm just saying, why not save the space? Put them all.
Where's the Vince Lombardi drop?
I mean, here's a suggestion. Put them all into one Foot Locker. Save some space. Why the separation?
That's enough. Finally, and I don't know how this got in the news, but veteran wide receiver Lance Moore has announced his retirement. The Atlanta Falcons on Monday announced that the veteran is retiring from the NFL after more than a decade of action. 33 years old, played for three teams over 10 seasons, best known for some nice seasons in New Orleans, which really tees up Greg. Listen, he's not the boss anymore, but when he wants to talk about something on the podcast, we're going to tee him up and let him get juicy on Lance.
I'm not getting juicy. I mean, how dare you? Know, you
take it away, Greg.
You act like that we wouldn't mention the retirement of a guy who caught the biggest and best two-point conversion play in Super Bowl history. Oh, how dare you?
You know, that's not respectful. Irish, I had nothing to do with that.
I thought the NFL retired him 3 years ago.
Woo!
No, go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry.
No, that was no.
Oh, can I did some investigative work here, and I found I found a tete-a-tete between Greg Rosenthal and Drew Brees from 2013, I believe, and he talks about Lance Moore. Tells Greg Rosenthal, Moore was always an unsung hero. Lance was just a quiet guy who just made plays and did what we asked him to do. I can think of so many big plays he had for us in his career. It's all rushing through my mind now. You enjoy coming to the work every day to be around guys like Lance.
Imagine, like, if the Jets ever had playoff success and Jericho Cotchery made one of the best plays in Super Bowl history for their first Super Bowl. That's how you would think of him.
I know. I'm just being a Isn't that allowed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every show.
What is your problem, Sessler?
I don't have a problem. Dan was mad. He wants all the bits to be his bits.
Listen, you could throw all your barbs at me. I could take it. I'm watching you, though, Sessler.
It wasn't directed at you.
I know, but you keep on trying to hurt my feelings today. I'm noticing it. You're trying to hurt me. Why?
I have a smile on my face right now.
Okay. Let's move on. That's what's happening in the news. And all right, now, listen, just to show there's no hard feelings, Greg, even after you took that shot at me.
Wait, which shot is that?
Something about bits, some nonsense. Greg wrote a banger. Training camp winners and losers, colon, Dante Fowler shines. That's the headline if you want to go look it up over on the .com. So why don't we start right there at Jaguars camp? Oh, yes, if it's August, that means there must be optimism around the Jaguars. And this time it's Dante Fowler, who missed all of his rookie year with a knee injury, but he is just shredding anyone in his way right now at training camp.
Well, there wasn't a ton of optimism in Jaguars camp last year at this time, if only because they had so many things happen badly to them, and it seems the opposite this time around. Dante Fowler's been dominant day after day, to the point where the coaches had to tell them for him to slow down because he might hurt someone else.
That's kind of a trope, by the way.
Right?
We hear that a lot.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. He kind of checked a lot of the trope boxes, saying that he was unblockable, that he was embarrassing offensive linemen, like everything you can do in a training camp he's done.
But we've also seen, you know, vines and other footage coming out of that camp, and there's evidence that he is playing well. To me, this has to be, if you're a Jaguars fan, beyond your wildest dreams how well he's looked in his first week of training.
Right, and you backed it up. I know it's only a scrimmage, but that's the biggest moment that they've had in camp. He was the dominant player in that scrimmage. And the thing I would like as a Jaguars fan, you needed a pass rusher. Sheldon Day and Yannick, and I don't want to get the name wrong, Ngakoue, I believe, who are two rookie defensive linemen, not as well known as their first two picks, Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack, and they have been getting talked up as guys who are going to make an immediate impact and are going to play a lot for this team, maybe be more important to this team than Miles Jack, for instance, is this year.
What the sneaky other side to this is that it puts so much pressure on Gus Bradley to get a defense of players that have not played together before to mesh very quickly. With all the parts, if they don't have a successful season, he's gone.
To me, they have such a recipe for their defense to be way, way better, and I think for the offense to take a natural step back. Everyone thinks you can just pencil in those sort of numbers that they put up on offense. I'm not sure that you can do that. They were behind
it. Should be better.
They were behind in a lot of those games. Allen Robinson's getting talked about that he's taking another step this year. Well,
don't you expect Julius Thomas to have a better season?
Yes.
I do. I think
Chris Ivory's there.
I think the offensive line is definitely a big concern. That there's no reason to believe that they're that much better on the offensive line.
That's fair.
There's your update on the Jaguars.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
That's true.
I love that lady.
Perhaps we're not factoring that in. You know, let's hear it one more time and just.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
She's right.
Oh, this you got to see the look in her eyes when she says steal the show.
Also looking good. We talked a little bit about Terrence West last week on the podcast, Greg, but reportedly the most explosive offensive player in camp. Mark, your thoughts?
Well, as we mentioned, it's one of two things. Either Terrence West, who, you know, was an extremely productive college player, has his head on straight finally, and has, you know, used the offseason to get his body in shape, which was not necessarily, these things were not the case in Cleveland, that's for sure, and not the case in Tennessee. So he's fulfilling these expectations, or when you're calling him the most explosive player, on your offense, it says something also about your offense, or it's somewhere in the middle.
I think if you look beyond the explosive player comment, we've been doing this long enough to kind of get a sense of when every offensive coach and the head coach and teammates and beat writers, every single person unanimously is saying, this is a different player.
Right.
And that's the case with Terrence West this year, that every person associated with the Ravens, basically all of his hard work this offseason is paying off right now.
This, Mark, is a textbook. You, for years, you're the guy that fears guys leaving the Browns and becoming stars. This is kind of the worst-case scenario, right? If a guy leaves the Brown, underperforms, goes to the Ravens and become – that's a bad situation, correct?
Yeah, I think the narrative is very ugly because what it says, and it's – again, they change coaching staffs in Cleveland so often that it's not even about this coaching staff. But that other coaching staff had a lot of draft picks and young players that completely flatlined, bottomed out, and it went from physically not becoming a better player to becoming off-the-field stuff. So it tells you how chaotic that coaching staff and that front office was and how poor of a job they did teaching compared to the very consistent Ravens.
They need players to step up, though. I mean, Perriman and Smith are still out with injury. Who knows when they'll be back? They had a million tight ends, and suddenly Pitta, Gilmore, and Max Williams are all hurt. Maybe they're not really serious injuries, but it just reminds you that this team is not great on offense right now.
One point about the Browns that Mark's mentioning, throughout history you can see this, that bad organizations, they get made fun of for being poor drafters, for not coaching well, for not having good quarterbacks. Not being able to develop young talent is usually the number one sign of a bad organization.
Yeah.
Moving on, you know, this was an eyebrow raising quote, Chris Wessling from Dolphins camp. Their offensive coordinator Clyde Christensen does not want a running back by committee. We don't want a substitute, Christensen told reporters via the Miami Herald. We really need one guy to be a three down back, stay in there for that drive. And that was odd to me because I would think of any team right now that I would be confident that they would probably be looking for some type of committee approach. It would be Miami, and yet that's not what the OC is saying.
It is interesting. And Arian Foster has the three-down skill set. We know that. But does he have the three-down durability at this stage in his career? I don't know about that. And what do you do with the information that Jay Ajayi is number one on the depth chart right now?
Well, these depth charts are weird. The PR staff's put it
from
together.
Team to team, they don't mean the same thing.
Yeah, and it's the first week, and it just seems like Foster's made a big impression. But the thing that stuck out to me from the Dolphins over the weekend is they had a team scrimmage, and they had 8 offensive series. And they gained 1 first down in those 8 offensive series.
Is that good?
I mean, that is something that's going to drive your coach crazy. And that's
You're not
only
surprised, are you?
I'm not totally. And that's not only one practice. But then if you read all the practice reports, he said the Miami defensive line has destroyed the Miami offense all camp. I don't know if that's good or bad. You could be excited about your defense or worried about.
Yeah, when you're playing yourself, there's always a positive and negative to these things.
Bad news for Jay Cutler, optimists. Their starting center, the Chicago Bears starting center, who I know this name, Rones Grasu, suffered a torn ACL. He's out for the season. Not a lot of line depth, especially up the middle for the Bears, so you got to be careful with that, Greg.
Kevin White also, the early reports, a little raw. Eddie Royal's been out of practice. Zach Miller's been out of practice. Alshon Jeffrey's been in and out of practice. It's just a weird – It's a weird team. They got plenty of time. All these injuries, you have plenty of time, but you have a downgraded offensive coordinator, and you really need White to be a difference maker.
The number one question I've had about this team all offseason is the offensive line.
Right.
And they have bodies shuffling all over the place.
Yep.
So how's it going to shake out here?
And a lot of people that are around that team were shocked that they got rid of Matt Slauson, and now they could really use someone there.
I feel like center for the Chargers.
That's right. We shouldn't even just do my winners and losers. I bet these guys got some winners and losers.
Hey, guys, pipe in. You got
it? Well, what's the lead here, Greg? Who did you put in your lead?
Well, that's right. The Browns made the lead. You were excited.
For the first time ever, ever literally, since this column has been written by Greg, a Cleveland player is featured in the winners column up top.
That's probably not true.
But we don't need to belabor this, but Corey Coleman, who absolutely ripped apart Cleveland secondary, and it is Cleveland secondary, so potential asterisks there, looks like what we just were saying Cleveland could not do. Could not develop young players, could not draft playmakers, and I think Corey Coleman is going to be a star. He's going to be a big one.
Speaking of first time ever, this might be the first time ever that I've been impressed by a Browns skill position player in 35 years of being famous.
35 years.
All right, Ozzie.
All right, would you skip
good.
The 80s?
All right, Ozzie Newsome was good.
What about Josh
Corey Coleman? Looks like the real deal.
Yes,
I'm
does.
Excited to.
What
yeah,
about
watch
Reuben Jones?
No.
What about Josh Gordon? I hear you though. You
Josh
know what?
Gordon did
it's
not
been
me.
That long because honestly, Tony Grossi, who he's been with the team since I was like in sixth grade. People don't like this, but he's negative tilted towards Cleveland because they deserve it. And he used words.
He would probably say he's just honest and
he's being honest. He's being
team.
Honest. And he sees stuff other people haven't seen. He was describing Corey Coleman with words that I've never heard him use for any player since the team has returned in 99 at least.
If you're used in the same sentence with Steve Smith, you have my attention.
Hmm.
I like everything about the Browns offense except for their quarterback. That's the only problem here.
Well, he was throwing the passes. I mean, I hear you.
I don't
I mean,
put it, much into that.
I hear you, but it's just –
He threw some bombs out there. I was surprised that Terrell Pryor – I know we kind of joke about how this is not a real story, but at this point, he is a starter at a position he just picked up a year ago, which is crazy. I mean, that he is going to be in their top three rotation. Maybe that's not good for Cleveland. Maybe it'll fade
how
away.
How many Browns receivers can you name?
Well, they have four rookies.
Got Andrew
so
Hawkins,
got a lot.
You got Rashard with Higgins.
Rashard
you're right.
Higgins.
Not a lot of. Not a lot of.
They have that, young players.
They have a lot of rookies.
Guys.
Would Terrell Pryor make the Packers?
No.
No.
So I mean, yeah, a grain of salt.
But he had a moment. If nothing else, he'll have a moment where he had a 75-yard touchdown back in Ohio Stadium with the Columbus fans, and he's doing the whole Ohio State thing. And who knows?
Nice moment.
It's more than you would expect that he'd be out there week one probably as a starter. It looks like now. I would not have expected that.
I brought up the Packers because it was some ridiculous off-season podcast we did where I think we were like picking guys that would shock people or something. I said Jeff Janis would be. A big contributor, and now there's whispers out there that he might not make the team. Is that a possibility after all they did in that playoff game? He was listed as a third team receiver on the team's initial depth chart behind Jared Aberderis. A day rarely goes by without a report noting Janis's difficulty in camp, says Greg Rosenthal in his write-up. We've heard that he struggles in this aspect of the game, but God, he made some plays. He made some season-saving plays. That doesn't get you a roster spot.
Well, he has four catches over the last two regular seasons.
Two of the biggest ones in Packers history.
I mean, I get that's that happens in the playoffs, though.
Yeah.
Feels like we've gone from one extreme to the other on this.
Right.
Common sense tells me he's going to make the team because he's one of their core special teamers and very good at it. And he has too much potential to lose. So he's probably not going to be in the wide receiver rotation, but he's probably going to be on the team.
And he'll have a chance at one comment that did make sense was, you know, missing last night hurt him because he seems like, you know, a quote-unquote gamer. Like, apparently he does not practice too well.
Well, someone was speculating that. They
so he's like the Tim Tebow of wideouts?
I don't know, but it's a terrible way to put it. But a guy with a lot of athleticism that maybe isn't as sharp in terms of being on the same page with the quarterbacks and making it all the right reads. Like, those guys sometimes do better in games than they do in a
absolutely.
Practice. Ty Montgomery hasn't been able to get back on the field for them.
That's been disappointing.
Doesn't help them.
They've been really high on him, but that was a microfracture ankle surgery.
Mm. I mean, one thing with Janis that you hear popping up over and over is Rodgers has to walk over and correct him on this or that. And then is there trust? I mean, with Aaron Rodgers, it seems over and over that he favors the players on the field are the players that he absolutely trust. That last year that was the issue. He couldn't trust his receivers to be in point X, Y, or Z, and he's not able to do with the ball what he could previous years. If Janis can't develop that over the next month, he's a special teamer.
How are you going to throw a back shoulder to a guy who doesn't know where he's supposed to be?
I mean, that might be the thing that the best quarterbacks of the last 10 years have in common more than anything. I mean, look at the guys who Tom Brady loves. Are the people... The advantage that Tom Brady and Peyton Manning have are how they see the defenses. And if they can't find a receiver who sees it like them, then it's like they're useless to them.
Well, every NFL receiver has to run option routes, and that's something we don't talk about a lot. But quarterback and receiver have to be reading the defense in the same way. Mm. And I don't think Jeff Janis is reading it the same way Aaron Rodgers is.
And I got all your tweets, Patriots fans, that Tom Brady was 27,000 for 27,000 in a scrimmage. Don't care. Because more like Tomb Brady because he's getting old.
Well, yeah, I would.
You're sticking with.
You think he's getting old?
Yeah, of
did
course.
Did you hear what Devin 39. McCourty said about him the other day?
I didn't. What did he say?
Called him Benjamin Button.
But he's not. That's the thing. That's a fake thing. Benjamin Button is not real. When you get old, you start to get crappier and crappier, and then you disappear. Mark my words. What's the date so you can pull this clip?
Mark my words. Irish. At some point, Tom Brady will decline.
He will decline slightly this season.
It's 8-8-2016. That's the date.
Jeff Fisher Day.
I thought it was July 9th.
I thought that was July 9th. Yeah, people were bringing that
joke back. Well, it kind of goes either way.
Yeah.
This is Jason Garrett Day.
Fair enough.
If you're a Broncos fan, how is it too early to – well, how concerned are you about the quarterbacks that Mark Sanchez is not – that this whole Trevor Siemian might start week one thing has gone from like, okay, that's just something coaches are saying, that's an offseason story, to I think this is a legitimate possibility that this could be happening.
If you're a Broncos fan, didn't you just watch the 2015 season and know that your quarterbacks
that's fair.
Were an issue already?
All three
put a lot of pressure on that defense, though. They need to be just as good, if
what
not
if,
better.
What if – now, you can laugh if you want. What if Gary Kubiak's right and Trevor Siemian is actually much better than his college stats would indicate?
People laughed about Russell Wilson.
People laugh at a lot of things.
Pete Carroll started to throw his name into the mix a few years back, and look what happened there.
Well, here's the thing. If it's a tie, you just go with Trevor Siemian. I mean, if he's equal to Mark Sanchez, which is people are saying he's been equal or maybe a little bit better so far in camp, it's like you go with him because he's got a chance to improve. He's a second-year player.
Yeah, he's been in the system for 2 years. Doesn't it tell you as much neck up as it does anything else that they're saying Simeon's just picking everything up quicker than Sanchez, is that shocking?
Well, Kubiak's quote over the weekend is, I'm really working with Mark on, you know, late in the down when things kind of collapse. That's and he's running around. That's kind of when his decision-making isn't so great. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, you think that's going to be tough to get rid of. Like, that's the thing.
7 years in.
He is
a bugaboo.
And he will if Mark Sanchez will never forgive himself if he does not take advantage of this opportunity. You got to win this job, Mark. It's the best team you'll ever play on.
As an unbiased observer, I'm rooting for either Lynch or Siemian. I've already seen the Mark Sanchez show.
It's fair.
We're going to see Lynch for a big chunk of the season, if not well more than half, maybe even three quarters.
Cut that as well. All right. All right. That's it for Monday's edition of the show. Mark, I'm sorry that I annoyed you so much.
I don't quite get where you're coming from. I found you were delightful today. You did a good job hosting, very professional.
Just a couple shots. I was noticing it. That's all.
You notice? I don't know. Weigh in here. Why am I? What's going on here?
Between you and I, buddy.
I think that Mark is a saint and leave him alone.
Yeah, that's why you go. That's why you go to the kissing cousin for help there.
I went where I needed to go.
Exactly.
He delivered.
Yeah. If you wanted someone to stir it up more, you would have gone to me.
Yeah.
Now we've should
have went
enough.
To the contrarian corner.
I think Wes did a good job summing up reality right there versus skewed reality.
I read on a blog over the weekend that Mark's analysis usually hits the nail on the head.
What?
In that case, Wes's did.
Do you have anything else?
Wait, what blog is this?
Any other fluffing that's necessary
the
before we
Jungle
go
Jungle blog, which wrote about our Andy Dalton discussion.
Huh.
Well, they spent about 18 paragraphs lauding Wes, and then like one quote from me, they're like, Sessler hit the nail on the head. I said, that's the only line I remember from that article. Very accurate. The rest of it needed some editing.
They quoted Greg's analysis in there, too. They did not quote any of Dan's analysis.
I mean, is the fluffing done?
That was less
are your ego stroked enough about this blog post?
I'm thinking about
– site.
Well, that was less of a fluffing and more of a shot at you. It just went right past you.
You know, because I was talking. No, it didn't go past me. But you know, once Mark went to Wes for support,
we're definitely gonna get late night texts from Dan tonight talking about this part of the show.
Here comes the kissing cousins at it again.
I was so thrilled with that moment that I'm thinking about having one of Ely's friends write a song about it.
Nah, it doesn't always work. Got to be the right personality. All right, guys. Let's wrap things up
before it gets any uglier.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll be back on Wednesday with another edition of the show. I will not be texting any of you tonight. You'll be out of my mind the second I walk out of this office. We'll be back on Wednesday with another show.
Long season ahead.
Unfortunately, no rap stars will be in the studio, but we will talk about all the NFL news that's fit to print and then some. Has that been used by anyone?
No, that's yours.
All the news that's fit to print?
It's all you.
Okay, good. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling. There you go. And the Irish are behind the glass, and this is Dan Hansa. Yeah, baby. Till Wednesday.
your Dan Hanses. Get your Dan Hanses. Hanses is the man's best radio read. Now listen to the sounds from around the league.